Pour rester ici pour les questions.
Okay, merci Cyriac. Et we're going to have about maybe 20 minutes, 18 minutes for questions. So actually I'll ask maybe Adele to come back up too and Jim to come up here, and you can address your questions at all three of our participants from this morning, and then we'll close for lunch and maybe talk a little bit about the agenda for this afternoon. Please use the microphone. Utilisez les microphones, s'il vous plaît, pour les questions.
Am I the first questioner, I guess? I'm Dr. Dolores Sandoval, Professor Emerita, the University of Vermont, third or fourth generation Montrealer from the 1800s, president and founder of the DaCosta Angelique Institute. And the information that you've provided today is really especially necessary for us to know about. On the other hand, I do have to say this, that I find myself hearing this, seeing this, on what I consider to be a segregated campus. In the fall of 2003, I was asked to develop a course, Women of Color in Canada. And during one of the faculty meetings, I learned that in asking the other women faculty what women faculty were on the campus, I was told, well, Rani Lee, who being a performing artist, most likely isn't tenured. Then they mentioned another woman, and she had left 15 years before. And from my students, I was told that there were very few faculty of color, and they could name them. In looking into the equity situation, the form for application and studying the equity on the campus had about five questions. None of them referred to race. Language, if you had Aboriginal background, but not race. And so there is no way for this institution to track who is hired, who is retained, who is promoted. And if we don't change what occurs on our university campuses, whom the faculty interact with, each other, the students see in leadership roles, none of the statistics are going to change. And with McGill being designated as one of the most diverse universities in the hemisphere, it's tragic. But thank you so much for what you have presented.
We share a lot in common, including a lake, because half the week I live on the other side in Willsboro, New York. There is a Lake Champlain. But what you're saying is tremendously important. I don't speak for the university, obviously. I speak for what I do and a set of beliefs that I have and a set of issues I want to push forward, which include, in social work, the hiring of visible minorities, where we have only one faculty person, where, in fact, we had a very, very remarkable, credible candidate that this just a few months ago that a majority of colleagues supported, but the administration overturned it. So, yes, there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of work to be done, and that's in social work. You would expect a totally different story. Yeah? So I agree with you. More work to be done at the University of Vermont, though. The University of Vermont does more work to... Is it?
Yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, all this to say that, yes, and we need strategies that are going to increase the representation in the student body. One of the nice things you see in social work, which you did not see 15 years ago, is you see many, many more students from the visible minority communities. They will make an impact. That is so absolutely important, both in terms of the profession itself, so we become enriched, as well as for the clientele that need to see people who come from the same experience, because then it's easier to ask for help, if for no other reason. So I agree with you, I support you, and I wish I could have been able to say here that the School of Social Work is miles ahead, but we're not.
Anybody else with a question?
I apologize if this might have been touched on because I got here late. But, Michael Kerr with Color of Poverty, Color of Change in Ontario. I just wanted to invite the panel members to say a bit more about not wanting to undermine or challenge in any way the more hopeful interpretation of some of the statistics in terms of positive projections going forward. But when I think about what's happened and is happening in Ontario, where the racialization of poverty and other forms of disadvantage and disparity are, in fact, getting deeper and wider, and they're carrying forward intergenerationally, so, and all the troubling statistics that attach to that, what, if I heard correctly that people are more optimistic in Quebec, why is that? How do you account for that? And the fact that trends are going in a very different direction in Ontario if they are going differently in Quebec?
Well, the trend here is not an optimistic trend. The trend is a persistent trend that the inequality that we documented 10 years ago and the raison d'etre for why we did the study again is to see maybe there has been significant kind of improvement. We haven't seen. What we have seen is that conditions in 2006 were better for everyone than they were in 96. Okay? That's true. And so members of the black communities have shown improvements in socioeconomic positioning compared to 10 years ago, as have members of the non-black community. However, what's persistent and continues is the gap between blacks and non-blacks persists, continues, that even though the situation is better for everyone, it has not created a more level playing field. So,
good day. I would like to speak about the English-speaking West Indian community, of which I am a member. And one of the things I would like to say is that we must take this report much further, as we are the ones who must take it much further than it is, because, you know, I see my community as a corporation that has failed miserably. So what do we do? Are we going to bring the same people back to rebuild it? The answer is no. We must have new ideas, new blood. The English-speaking Caribbean people, we must have reform, a complete restructuring. And this is what I've been asking for years. So therefore, we must set up a conference, we must set up a hearing as to know why we, the leadership in the community, over the years, has failed the community. Because in my view, that's a big part of our problem. And unless this is addressed, there's no way that we can move forward. Thank you.
Any additional comments or questions?
The only thing I'd add is that our intention here and the intention of what our center does is to be able to use the expertise that we have at a university and to make it available to those communities that often don't have access to it. I agree with you that, I'm not sure I agree with you. I'm not so sure about leadership failing. I think the challenges have been that incredibly difficult, and over such a long period of time, that no matter who the leadership was, it would be very, very difficult to turn this around. I think part of the issues of linguistic abilities and where people live make it more difficult for the community to speak in one voice. I think the fact that Statistics Canada undercounted members of the black community up until 10 years ago and undercounted by 40% influenced kind of the claims that a community could make. So I think it's very, very complex, and while we should always hold our leaders in account, because that's why they're there, I think what it involves is a commitment by each one of us in our own way, by people who are black and people who aren't, who believe in social justice and believe that everyone should share in the same rights, that we translate data into tools that the community can use in order to access those rights, those entitlements, the ones that Adele was speaking about. You'll hear more about this afternoon. That shouldn't be. And we can work together to change that. And if we don't, we'll regret it. That's my feeling.
Sorry, if you have a question, you can just come up to the mic in advance. You don't have to put up your hand. There are two microphones.
So my question will be going to the leaders here, the black leaders. It's nice to hear that you were the first lady for affirmative action in the University of Vermont. That's pretty good. And to Professor Adel Blackett. My question to you is that how have you, the leaders, the few ones among the blacks that have got up to the level of top echelons, try to mentor with the youth? Because I'm just 5 years old in Canada, and I kind of see that the leaders, in my own perspective, have not done enough to mentor us. Because I'm here studying the McGill, and I sit in the class, and sometimes I see myself as the only black person in the class, and send applications to some faculties, get rejected. And sometimes I kind of want to wonder what is going on. How do the leaders mentor us? Because one thing I know among the black community is that when they get up there, they kind of don't want to care about the others anymore. And it's sad. It sickens me to my heart that we don't have mentors. Even the few ones up there don't care anymore. It's very easy for them to scandalize those who are on the street and those who don't want to pick up their bags and like pull up the bootstraps and work hard. But what have you guys done to help us? I want to know. Thank you.
Thank you for raising that question. It's a hard question, but it's an important question, and I think it takes a certain courage to raise it. Let me start just by saying, just as you look around the classroom and you're the only black person there, I look around the faculty council and I'm the only black person there. But I'm in a position of relative power, right? So you rightly judge me and others like me in terms of what I do with that power, right? And one of the things that I do, certainly, is work very closely with my students to try to make sure that their life opportunities are better than mine have been, just as those who mentored me did so from out of the hope that my life options would be better than theirs. But mentoring is a very personal, individual, relationship-based action. One, though, that I think is ripe for study. I've actually done some writing on mentoring myself, because it also cuts at what we mean by merit, right? We know that there is a tendency to mentor those who remind us of ourselves when we were younger or when we were newer in our field. And a disproportionate number of the mentoring opportunities go to those who are already overrepresented in the universities or in the workplaces that we seek entry to. And so what does that mean? When we ask the one black professor to mentor, we do so legitimately, but what do we say about the 100 white or non-black professors? What is their responsibility? Are they not also responsible for mentoring for diversity? Right? This is another crucial way to be thinking about how beyond formal policies you actually create an environment where there can be more than one of us, where there can be many of us, and we cultivate ability, we cultivate talent, we cultivate excellence through the time and energy that we invest in teaching and sharing through the mentoring relationship. So you've put your finger on a crucial issue, but I would encourage you to think about it, as many of us, I think, around this room have, in a broader and more systemic fashion. And that means being critical of mentoring in the way that it's currently thought of, and thinking about whether mentoring is an institution for fostering diversity that all of us, black, white, members of other racialized communities, have towards the next generation. Thanks.
Okay, so this is probably going to be the last, last two questions, but if we can make them very short, because we're now into the lunch. Into the lunch break. Thanks.
My question will be to the gentleman who spoke about the African and, report. How do you suggest or advise how to build network into an African community that came from a society that was separating because of tribal problems, differences between Hutus and Tutsis and stuff? Now, coming into a new country, a new land, now those same people are bringing the same differences that they can mingle, they can come together. How can you build a network so that a young one can profit with that?
I will speak in French. It's very damaged in our community. Members come from African, where there have been conflicts, ethnic conflicts. When they arrive here, it's very damaged. They live separated. Ça, c'est question. D'abord, il y a des gens qui sont au Canada pour avoir fui un conflit qu'on a tué tout le monde dans son clan. Donc il est d'une ethnie, il se ramasse ici au Canada, il a perdu les membres de sa famille en Afrique, tué par les gens de l'autre ethnie, et les gens de l'autre ethnie se retrouvent ici. Humainement, d'un coup, ça ne peut pas, le courant n'est pas facile. Nous, on peut raisonner ça lucidement, mais ce n'est pas du tout facile. Et le problème, c'est de vouloir recréer ces conflits ici à Montréal. L'essentiel, c'est de comprendre que ce qui est arrivé, mais qu'on ne cultive pas la haine, la rancune ici. Et surtout pas ne pas l'enseigner à ses enfants. On se retrouve, la question qu'il pose est très pertinente. Les gens originaires du Congo, du Rwanda, du Burundi, on remarque que des fois, ils recréent les mêmes groupuscules. Entre adultes, je dis que ce n'est pas automatique de pardonner tout de suite. Puis malheureusement, leurs enfants ne fréquentent que les mêmes associations des parents, ce qui est quand même dramatique. Qu'un enfant qui est né ici, qui est venu en bas âge, continue à revivre ces mêmes conflits. Je voudrais vous témoigner qu'on se rend compte même que les mêmes ethnies qui se sont entretuées en Afrique arrivent plus rapidement à la réconciliation, mieux que les gens qui sont ici, ce qui est dramatique.
I could just add a bit of levity. I think we have in Montreal two big tribes who have troubles getting along. So it's not just tied to the African continent. But last question, please.
My name's Kevin George. The question I have, first I want to thank Dave Austin and everyone for the work that was done, important work. It relates to analysis of residential patterns among blacks in Montreal. Not noted here is the serious brain drain that's occurring in our community and all of my friends and university students and graduates that are not staying in Montreal, that are heading to Toronto. I would like to, for panel members to speak to that and the impact of that in our community.
We have additional data that we haven't managed to incorporate into this document, which looks at the percent, the numbers of people who've moved in the last 5 years, who've moved from Montreal to Toronto, and the reverse, from Toronto to Montreal. We don't have that data today. But what I'm reminded of is that last series of studies we did a national study, and then we did one on Montreal, and then on Toronto. And when we gave the Montreal study, we got a lot of comments like that. Now we know why we're taking the 401. But then, when we did the Toronto study, we found the same results in Toronto. And there, the issues of language were played less than it does here. Yeah. So it seems to me, one, that the problem is Canadian-wide. It's not just Montreal. And moving to Toronto might not do it, might not find the promise of a better career and a better future. But joining together young people, young academics, professionals from across the country, from the black community, to take a stand together about these issues. Because the issues in Toronto, we found, were no different than the issues in Montreal. The same rates of unemployment compared to non-blacks. The same differences in income and all that. So young people tend to think, I'll go somewhere else and it'll get better. But the sad part of it all is the data doesn't show that it's any better in Toronto or anywhere else in Canada than it is here. In terms of residential patterns, what we see, and again, that's a whole separate volume, what we tried to do this time is to present accurate data on members of the black community in each of 27 neighborhoods, because it's been very frustrating for community organizations to get some real numbers. You get a number of people who say they're black. You get a number of people who say they're single parents, a number of people who say they're unemployed. But you don't get it together in a way so you can create profiles within each community. In doing that, we found some very, very interesting trends. There is a burgeoning black middle class in Montreal, and you see it in residential patterns in places like Laval, Brossard, Pierrefonds, the West Island a bit. Yeah. That shows some promise. But what we also see is in neighborhoods, where blacks and non-blacks have identical, or can't say identical, have similar characteristics, yeah. What do we find? The person likely to own his home is the non-black person. The person likely to be unemployed is the black person. And what does that create in terms of cohesion within a geographic community, let alone across communities? So that's why we did the residential analysis. And my big hope is that community groups at a grassroots level, because any policy problem is local. You experience it locally, and the organizing needs to take place locally and nationally. That hopefully these will be some tools that will assist community organizers to take this data and turn it into real progress.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up the first part of our forum today. We're actually already into the lunch break. So lunch is being served in the hallway. Is it in the hallway? Do you have to go out here? So turn right and then right. But we're hoping that all or most of you will stay with us for the afternoon, where we'll have the presentation of the qualitative data. And also, hopefully, we'll have a chance to talk about some of the follow-up stemming from the presentation of the report in terms of how the continuation of this process, really, in terms of how we can talk more in the community about how the report can be used, whether it be for policy purposes, setting priorities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just before we go to the break, I would like to acknowledge one more person. That's Merlan Pierre, who's sitting in the back, who was the agent for this project from Citizenship and Immigration. Thank you. Okay. So we're running a bit behind schedule, so please come back for 1 o'clock, even though it's 10 minutes past 12. Okay, the afternoon is very tightly packed, and it's going to be a bit tight time-wise.